It's nice when you can pinpoint the exact moment when something starts in your life. And for me, that was the summer of 1985 in Brewster, New York. It was a little convenience store, nothing much special about it, the usual snacks and sodas. But one day I wandered in there, and I found a product that called itself Jolt Cola and advertised on the side, as if this was normal, all the caffeine and twice the sugar. And that's where it all started. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who are supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I was seeing my physician about 2 weeks ago, and I was talking about some symptoms I was showing, and at some point I mentioned to her that I did drink Red Bull, and she turned to me and looked and said, "Why?" in that same way that somebody with a lung problem might mention how many packs they smoke, or that somebody with a broken leg indicates they're going to go climbing tomorrow. She was horrified. But for me, energy drinks have been part of my life, all of my life. I've taken her advice, and for the foreseeable future, energy drinks are not going to be on my menu. But for many years, they were a critical part of how I got around and how I got through my day. Starting all the way back when I was 14 in 1985, Jolt Cola was a completely different way of looking at soda for me than anything before it. I drank Coke and Pepsi. I was part of the Pepsi Challenge when it went through malls in the early 1980s, but I just thought of soda as another drink you had, just something you did, like orange juice or an Orange Julius or a McDonald's shake, just part of the experience of a teenager. You really don't think about the health aspects. It's just about what tastes good. That simple Jolt Cola bottle, with its very direct claim that it would have twice the sugar and all the caffeine, there was something special about that. I bought a bottle, took it home, and while I'd like to say that it was something special, that it changed me fundamentally, it's not quite like that. I drank it, and it tasted good. I didn't notice any particular energy spike or any change in how I was. It was just a neat thing in a summer of neat things. The ever new discoveries of my youth. To be frank, I really didn't think about beverages as a personal choice until well into my 20s. I didn't drink, so I didn't have preferences for beer or wine or brands of other liquor. I just liked soda when I had it. I definitely loved full-bodied sodas, didn't really like the diets. In 1995, working for Psygnosis, there was a test copy of the Wipeout game, the flagship racing game that Sony would put out with the PlayStation, and in it were ads for something called Red Bull. In fact, as I've mentioned before, when I saw these Red Bull ads in Wipeout, I thought it was all a fake brand that had been put in there to simulate beverage ads that you would see in a racing game. I didn't know it was a real thing. Red Bull hadn't quite made it over to the United States, and when I later saw it in a store, I was pretty darn surprised. At the time that I was working in Psygnosis, I would get up in the morning, walk down from Harvard Square to Central Square, and along the way stop off and buy some sort of caffeinated drink, usually a Jolt Cola, often a liter of it. I'd polish that thing off and I'd be able to get through my morning and then through the day. But when Red Bull started to show up in the stores, it had two attributes back then that may start getting lost to time. The first was the form factor of that tiny cylindrical can. The other was how ridiculously expensive it was. Over time, we've been trained to accept our drinks being over a dollar. But that was pretty rare at the time for anything smaller than a liter. And here comes along this $2 can of soda. And Oh, how terrible it tasted. If you've never had Red Bull, or you've only tried it once or twice, I can assure you, that taste is not your fault. It's not you failing to see a flavor that others see. Red Bull tastes like liquefied sweet tarts. Let's not kid ourselves. You drank it, you winced, and then a little bit later, you started feeling a little more energy. In the early days of Red Bull in the United States, a rumor went around that Red Bull contained ingredients involving, I kid you not, bull semen. There are actually quotes from the Red Bull organization saying, "We cannot talk about our proprietary ingredients." It was because the main ingredient was called taurine, like Taurus, and I think some folks just made the jump. But taurine is just another chemical compound. It doesn't come from any animal. Apparently, Red Bull thought that putting a little bit of mystery and weirdness into the Red Bull story would sell a little better. I'm not a drinker, so to me, Red Bull was never a mix. Red Bull and vodka is a standard drink out there, but for me, it was pure Red Bull. Red Bull added a diet Red Bull, which made Red Bull taste like ambrosia. And then they added Red Bull Zero, which was for people who couldn't stand the full-bodied taste of Red Bull diet. Nothing improved the taste. A lifetime of Red Bull drinking has burned into my memories the wincing faces of anybody who I started talking to after drinking a can. It is foul stuff. Through and through. Even as they've added various flavors and changed up the mixture over the years, there's been no point where one has drank Red Bull and thought that they were drinking anything delightful. Red Bull did have one thing going for it, though. It sold insane amounts. It made so much money that you started seeing Red Bull sponsoring all sorts of sports events, F1 racing, plane racing, and, of course, various stunts involving jumping out of tall places. One of the things that they sponsored was the Red Bull Music Academy, a collection of workshops and seminars and presentations that they recorded and made available on a site. This academy announced that it was shutting down this year after 10 years of existence, and I reached out to them, and they had given me full permission to mirror all of it at the Internet Archive. This is great because many of those seminars have many different musicians and creators and overviews of technical equipment that have some real historical value. People who normally don't talk for very long about what drives them and what got them into music and what their approaches are. There are these 2-hour Q&A sessions with them. There's some gems in there. And while I was going to do it anyway, it's nice when they give you permission. The Red Bull cylindrical can is another interesting story because it started to inspire a whole range of copycats. A bunch of people looked at the fact that Red Bull was making so much money, hand over fist, using these little tiny cylindrical cans. Well, you just started to see a lot of beverages come out that way. They had incredibly weird art on them. They used terms like energy, power, bang, and indicated to you that if you drank this, you'd be up and at them in no time. Many of them had taurine, all of them had caffeine, and for many years, I collected those cans. There was something just neat about that form factor that really appealed to me. The drinks themselves, less so. I guess I have a real weak spot for when something becomes a fitted canvas, when it's a standard size or a standard area, and people use that to make all sorts of different imagery around the product. It's the same approach that you see in those herbal supplements that gas stations sell, that strange combination of Asian tiger art combined with space and sexuality. It leaks into energy supplements of all kinds, and I just appreciate that there's people out there making a living using all sorts of stock photos and simple paint macros and making these very odd, very memorable attempts to convince you that what you're about to eat, swallow, or drink will make you better. For something like 10 years, I collected energy drink cans until I had probably a couple hundred. For a long time, they were along the wall of my computer room, or I would put them up on shelves. I went through a lot of different approaches with them. I'd rearrange them depending on my mood or what kind of decorating I was wanting to do. When I was traveling, I would run into a strange, unusual drink, and I'd buy one just to have the box, just to have the can. And in one of the rare cases this has happened for me, I got to a position where I was getting rid of various things, and I just decided to get rid of the cans. Just threw them out. There was something representative about having tons and tons of empty cans that just didn't appeal to me, and I just didn't feel like reaching out and trying to find someone to take them. I have no doubt that there's some sort of energy drink collection out there that dwarfs mine and more than takes over what I was trying to do. There's collections out there for beer cans and soda cans of all sorts. I'm not worried. I did enjoy that chase, and I did see some really strange one-off cans. As for caffeine itself, I don't know. I get a good reaction from it. I don't get the jitters. I don't get shaky. I really find that I just start to focus and make a lot of connections that I normally don't when I'm caffeinated. It has, on the whole, been a pretty good relationship. The sugar in the drinks, maybe not so much. But the caffeine, I think, has added that little extra edge of productivity, that little bit of extra that got me through filming and traveling and putting things together and writing descriptions and metadata. It gave me a little bit of a battery that I think turned itself into productive work. Maybe that makes it a performance-enhancing drug. Maybe it confuses some people that somebody who's never had alcohol and never smoked and hasn't done any drugs has no problem with a large amount of caffeine. And I think fundamentally it comes from the fact that I was introduced to it as a teenager. I didn't smoke as a teenager. I didn't try drugs. I didn't drink. It never got normalized for me. Technical curiosity, playing with computers, doing all sorts of things online, that also came in my teenage years. I'm not sure what it all means, but maybe if I hadn't had soda as much as I did when I was a kid, I wouldn't have made it such a large part of my life. This won't be the first time that I've gone off caffeine for a while. There have been entire years that I went off caffeine, just trying to get a grip on my health or figure out where problems are, and this is one of those times. I don't think I ever made it part of my identity. It was definitely a tool in my toolbox when I was trying to get a little bit of extra energy to get a job done. I'll be clear, I do not recommend the caffeinated lifestyle for people. If you don't use caffeine to stay awake or get focus or wake up in the morning, there's no reason for you to start. While it's helped me, in my opinion, I totally could see a world where I never had caffeine, where I focused my energy in other ways and allocated time better so that I wouldn't need 16 hours or 17 hours in a day to work on things. I could have just built my discipline up a little better, been able to sit down, get the work done, and move on. But I will say that, in the end, my health is more important. Having these cylindrical cans in my life, it was fun. I definitely enjoyed it. But times change, my health changes, and when I saw the look of abject horror in both my primary care physician and my cardiologist's faces when they found out that I was a Red Bull drinker, I knew that fun, energetic chapter was coming to a very quick end. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Bakoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who are helping me get out of debt. So the reason that I was seeing my primary care physician was because I had felt a little weird. It felt like a little bit like it was in Australia when I had my heart attack, but much fainter, way in the background, but all over my body. I went to see my physician. She didn't see anything in an EKG or anywhere in my blood tests. So I went home. But the next day, I just couldn't shake the feeling that this needed to be looked at. So I traveled to my favorite hospital with the best emergency room in the county and asked for a little bit of extra attention. They did some initial tests. They didn't find anything, but they told me they would schedule me for a stress test the next morning. I did the stress test. Things went pretty well, and I thought I was going home until it turned out they did discover that something was a little off with my heart. One ambulance ride, one operation, and 2 days later, I now have a second stent in my heart. I did not block off an artery this time. I did not have a heart attack, but one of my arteries was 99% blocked, and that's where my feelings were coming from. I had an incredible doctor do the operation. There was no music in that operating room, and I was released the next day. It's now been a couple weeks. I feel fine. I feel better than fine. It turns out that even with all the drugs helping and all of the exercise and the good living, I still produce plaque in my arteries faster than a person should. It's possibly genetic. It's not clear what the cause is, but it does mean that going forward, I'll be looked at a lot closer. It also means I've racked up another bill for my medical. My dad will be helping me on this one, and it's still worthwhile to mention to people who are not in the United States to know that the sum total for all the medical attention that I received is about $70,000. The final bill I'll get will probably be around $5,000 or $6,000, and we'll see how that goes. My family will be helping me with that. I can tell you that I'm very glad to still be here. I'm very glad that I'm still able to do the things I want, and that if cutting out my favorite energy drinks, it's a price I'm willing to pay.